So you bought rental properties so they can create more time and financial freedom. But the problem is you're spending a lot of time managing the properties. How do we automate our properties so that it's creating more time instead of costing it? How do we, as landlords, protect our investments, our time, and our progress so that we can scale our portfolio? That's the question we're going to answer in this podcast. My name is Sam Kwok, and this is the Landlording Automated Podcast. Hey, what's going on, everyone? This is Sam Kwok here, one of the Kwok Brothers, and welcome back to another episode of Landlording Automated Podcast. And we have an ultra special guest here. I might have to put this person in like the original, the OG of, you know, the Kwok Brothers learning how to invest in multifamily. And John was one of the guys that probably we look up to more the most in terms of multifamily, just getting started in that. He was a huge inspiration, been on my list to interview for our podcast series for a while. And in fact, you'll hear from John again with our other podcast series, which is the First Deal Experience. So John, what a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for jumping on to do a podcast with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's always great talking to you guys, and yeah. I'm excited to be here.
For sure. So John, you're one of those guys that, you know, when a beginner looks at, like, how the heck did he do that? So John's got like, you know, several multifamily apartment buildings. He's had, he's done a restaurant business before. You also owned a marketing company. I mean, you've done so much, but let's go and focus on the real estate side of things. Tell us how you got started and how you were able to manage the craziness of being a property manager and a landlord.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think the first thing is to think about, you know, why I got started. Yeah. Number one, I think my influence was basically due to my background. Growing up in Chicago, in the south suburbs of in apartment buildings my whole life.
Yeah.
That was kind of my introduction to multifamily. And, you know, I decided to go that path after I was in the corporate world for a while when I graduated from college and I was out and, you know, trying to think about what I was going to do. It was just a natural fit to me because I think back and I can remember the rent guy, you know, knocking on the door, getting that rent check from my mother that was working 9 to 5. And I would see this guy come once a month. So that's kind of ingrained. It has been ingrained in my head for a long time. That's really why I got started. You know, and how I got started, it started with a duplex. And I just kind of went up from there. I think I did my next building was an 8-unit building, and I did a 10-unit building and a 30, and then I just kept going with it. But yeah, it's been a great ride. I have, you know, limited my number of units now, but, yeah, I did. I scaled up pretty fast, and real estate is a great vehicle, and still it was a great vehicle for me to get to where I was going at the time.
Gotcha. So where are you now in terms of your unit count? Not that it matters, but just wanted to get an idea for myself.
So we're at a couple hundred units. Okay. Over the last couple of years, I've been selling in the last, let's say it's 2020. Right. So we've been selling more units in the last 5 years than we have been buying units. Mm. We've bought units over that time, but nowhere near the amount that we've sold. Right. I feel like the market has, I've talked to you about this before. I think the market gets mature and you need to do different things in different markets. I know investors that buy all the time. Matter of fact, I just was talking to somebody that was, has a closing Monday on a multi tens of millions of dollar deal.
Yeah.
And I don't know, for me, it's always been, you know, now that I've done this for 20 some years now, I'm dating myself. I see these, you know, undulations in the market, and what goes up is going to come down, and what comes down goes up. And so I just learned to time that.
Yeah. So you plan on buying after this, you know, what appears to be a recession, right? I think we're here. Do you plan on buying more, or are you looking at a final round of your exit strategy? I mean, what are your plans after, I guess, this cycle that we're looking at?
So I've not, like I said, I've not bought a lot over the last 5 years as much as I've sold. And now as this event is happening, I don't know if you've talked about it with your audience, but you know, with the coronavirus and the economy that is really the aftermath, you know, the economy side of things is going to be a lot bigger story than the coronavirus. And I'm not trying to discount anybody's sickness or death or anything like that. I just mean, you know, we are going to be dealing with this for a long time. The government has come in, they put stimulus in immediately. There's going to be more stimulus to come. That presents more problems because, you know, if you go, if you ever look at the National Debt Clock, the debtclock.org, there's a site you can go to. You know, we're going to run into the problem of not bringing in enough money to pay that credit card bill or the debt that, every month, right? And so those are the things that I think about. And so we have a lot of dust going on right now. When this dust settles, then it's going to be a much better time to say, okay, are we at the bottom? Are we close to it? And then let's take a look at some, let's raise some cash or use some cash that's it's raised already. And let's look at where asset prices are. And does that make sense? Number one, do they cash flow? Number two, what's the upside to them? Because right now, I think if you try to go out and buy something right now, in this space, it's like catching a falling knife. It would be very hard to do that. And I think there's nothing wrong with kind of letting this settle a little bit and finding out where we are.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And it's a, that's an awesome commentary. In fact, I was going to ask you about that towards the later part of the podcast, but I guess we had the ice cream before we had the meal. So that's really good. That's really good. So with that being said, you have several hundred units and you've had, I know in the past you've had thousands, right?
Yeah.
What did you do to be able to walk away from the day-to-day operation as a multifamily investor? I'm sure you had staff, you had a system, you had a team.
Yeah.
What did that system look like for you when you first got sort of, you were scaling up?
Yeah. So, you know, in my career, I've had, to my fault, this is a fault, I've had a lot of businesses. So at my peak with the real estate units, gosh, I had other businesses such as restaurants, as you mentioned, and a real estate education and things like that at that time. And I was traveling around the world. I was doing a lot of speaking and, you know, I had a radio show on Sirius XM, just all kinds of stuff going. And what once became my mission and passion to buy as many units as I could, I just kind of, I'm like the cat that gets the mouse. I get kind of bored sometimes after the fact. And so, you know, gosh, at one time we had a staff of 50 people, you know, and as I started to do different things with units, you know, I'd find myself, you know, I'd sell a complex in Indianapolis and, you know, there goes all the staff with the new owners, perhaps. But I've learned some things over my years of doing this, and it's really, you don't want to be the technician in all of this work.
Right.
You know, you want to be more the entrepreneur, and there's people that you can put in place to do that work. That's the system, that you should be thinking about. I didn't do that early on. I was trying to do everything myself, and there's some things I'm really, really good at. And there's a lot of things that I'm really, really not good at.
Yeah.
And I learned that overall. And you know, hindsight is always 20/20. But if I would have learned that earlier, I think I would have maybe gone a different way. So over the years, I've kind of diminished my amount of units. And with that were the people that were working with me at the time. So that's happened over the years. I do think that one of the reasons that scaling is important for a real estate investor is so that you can add people to your team and have the real estate pay for those people. I see a lot of people doing the single family houses. That's their business. That's great. but they're always, you know, you're always reinventing the wheel. They do the flip, they get the money. They have to do the flip again to get the money. That's almost right. Like going to a, you know, go to work for 2 weeks, get a check, go to work for 2 weeks, get a check.
Right.
You really, you don't want to turn this into a job. You don't want to turn this into a hobby. You want to turn this into a business. So to do that, you got to scale.
For sure. For sure. So what are the, you know, you look at, I mean, you've been in the education space. So you look at any beginner or landlord that's getting started. What would you tell them, you know, with, they may have three or five, you know, single family or 2 to 3 units, in that scaling, what sort of skills or preparation do you think they got to have to then take that 2 to 3 unit and scale up to 20, 30, 40, 50 units?
Yeah, I think timing is a big thing. Mm. You know, now's not the time to be going into your bank and asking for money.
Right.
You could. I think it's more difficult today. You know, with the events going on, but that should have been done 3 years ago, and yeah. Raising money should have been done over the last 3 years so that you're ready for, when the dust settles here. The dust may not settle for 6 months, for 4 months, for a year. Some people are saying 18 months. I don't know about that, but, so that's number one. You've got to think about your financial resources and what you can put forth when the dust settles. Mm-hmm. That's going to be key timing for people right now. I hear all kinds of people saying, I'm going to buy real estate next week because it's cheap. It's not as cheap as it's going to be right now. It's going to get cheaper or less expensive. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. Let the market play its way out. What's interesting about the real estate market and asset prices is that it's kind of like working out. I'm no one to talk about working out, by the way, but it's kind of like working out in that, you know, it'll take you 12 weeks, 16 weeks to get in shape, but it takes you a good 2 weekends to get out of shape.
Right.
And that is kind of like the real estate market. You know, we've been since 2008 on this 10 to 12 year track to repair the market on the real estate side for a long time, but gosh, it could be destroyed in 6 months, 12 months, something like that. And so it's kind of the same thing. So I think if I was thinking about what to do next, which I always am, but what I would do for someone that has 3 to 5 to 8 units is I would think, okay, what kind of equity do I have in place right now? Mm-hmm. Can I weather this storm? Because if you can't weather the storm, perhaps maybe sell those assets and set aside some cash, because those assets may drop in value, but the cash you can use for other things depending on what you're going to do. And then I would say, okay, how do I get enough financial assets so that I can go buy things? So that you've got to get your deal in order with regard to what you're offering to investors. Mm-hmm. If you're raising money that way, are you following SEC guidelines, things like that?
Yeah.
Other people may have dry powder ready to go. And then you're going to have to say, okay, where am I? Where's my investment market? What's happening there with assets? And how do we define a bottom?
Yeah. For sure. So it sounds like the main attribute to all what you've said is just knowledge, right? The education component, you know, being able to put the pieces together, right? Gathering facts, doing the research, understanding the market, and understanding where we are and where our listeners are at in terms of their situation, right?
Yeah, for sure. You gotta have, you know, people that you're surrounding yourself with, your community, your, mm-hmm. you know, that are feeding you with data, getting the education that is going to enable you to make the right moves mm-hmm. in the right time. You know, I was talking before about timing. You got to have timing on the way out when the market is almost at the top, and you've got to have timing on the bottom side of the market. I think back at a diagram that was in my first book way back when, and I call it the fish diagram, but basically what it is a diagram that shows the top and the bottom of a market and how people react or how people should be reacting. Mm-hmm. You know, right now I think we are on the down slope, which is good. because that is going to enable more people to scale that business. If they have 3 to 5 to 8 units, mm-hmm. you want this to happen. Like you should be, I mean, you don't want anybody see anybody hurt or anything like that, but you want this to happen in that this is going to allow you to get into the game when asset prices are less and people are fearful. That's when mass chaos is going on, like it has been, you want to be in a position to say, I got this. This is what we're going to do. You're the leader at that point. And people are going to fall behind that person or that your group. They're going to mm-hmm. fall behind meaning getting in order. They'll listen to a leader because when there's fear, people want that knowledge. And that's why education is so important.
Right.
Because knowledge, education calms people down. Like, can you imagine going into your financial planner or your real estate agent or broker or stock broker and going to them and saying, oh my gosh, we just had this pandemic. Markets are going crazy. What do I do? And can you imagine them saying, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, right.
You would feel like really fearful. But what if this happened? What if this happened, Sam? What if we went in and said, hey, I know exactly what to do. Here's what we're going to do. Step one, boom. Mm-hmm. Step two, boom. Step three, boom. We can get those done in the next 2 weeks. We're going to take action when this market and dust finally settles. It might be 4 months, it might be 6 months, mm-hmm. but we will be ready to go. We're going to put you in a better place when we get out of this mess mm-hmm. than when you came into it.
Right.
By far. There's a difference there, and that's the knowledge that you're talking about.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. So just to kind of wrap things up here, John, any last parting wisdom for our new investors or investors wanting to scale, automate their business? I mean, you've seen it all, right? I feel like if you were a Army veteran, you were in Afghanistan like 20 years and like you got like million confirmed kills. And
yeah, well, I've seen a lot. My advice would be this too shall pass. If you have 3, 5, 8 units and you're struggling maybe because of renters or the economy, note, this will pass. This happens over and over. This is a cycle and cycles go around and they come around. You just mm-hmm. want to be ready for when you need to take action. The people that take action when fear is the greatest is the ones that do really well. I'm reminded of the 1907 earthquake in San Francisco. That's how mm-hmm. Bank of America was started. And if you go back and read that storyline, you know, this guy that started what now is known as Bank of America, you know, acted when there was fear, but he acted in a way of service. Mm. And if you can be of service to other people during this time and really provide value with your company, with your investments, with yourself as an individual, not only are you going to make it through, but you never know what that's going to do for your business long term. You might be the next Bank of America.
You never know, right? Absolutely. So, John, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And just, you know, I know it's been a short 25 minutes so far. And I know I've gotten a lot of value out of it. Anytime I hear you, just part wisdom, I get a ton of value. So, John, I appreciate you. And how could people find you? Do you have anything that you could probably offer to our audience or any way they can contact you or?
Sure. We got a lot. You can find me in a lot of different places. Yeah. John@johndesauer.com, you know, is probably the best way to find me.
Yeah. And I know some people,
and Facebook and all of that I'm on.
Yeah. Some of the seasoned veterans are like, no, don't find me. Like I'm in the cave. Like don't come look for me. You know, they're trying to go underneath, you know, trying to get away from the whole entire, right? The public eye type of thing. But you know, you're always willing to share and I appreciate that. So John, thank you so much. And for those who are listening, we'll go and leave the information down below, johndesauer.com. And until next time, I'll see you guys in another episode.
Thanks guys.
Hey everybody, this is Sam Kwok here once again. I hope you enjoyed the episode of the Landlording Automated Podcast. Now, if you can automate all the same old repetitive tasks in your property management, how much time do you think you can save? Well, my team is launching a software called Flowmatics that can do just that.
We want you to stop spending your precious time, energy, and stress and simply live your life. And that's what the software can ultimately do. So just head over to automatemyproperties.com and check out how Flowmatics can save you money, time, and energy by automating your properties. Again, that's automatemyproperties.com. Go and check it out and start living your life without the stress and waste of energy.